Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for January 3rd, 2018. If you're following along at home, we didn't do one last week. I don't know why, except there weren't enough folks around. I know I wasn't there because I was sick and had no idea what on earth was going on for the most part. Sounds like Sylvan had similar. I don't know about other folks, but here we are today and ready to get started. We've got a few folks with us today. Not going to run through all the names, but we can go ahead and get started here. So let's take a look at a couple of pull requests to start with. Let's see. Has errors, still testing. Theo, you're here, right?
Yes.
So right now, the rename POSIX date to date PR fails because of a changelog tool needing a corresponding update.
But, oh, yes.
But so changelog tool doesn't really, we could, if we added a release process like we do for Pony Stable, right? But just for Linux to changelog tool, then we wouldn't have that dependency because we could do the two independently. So I'm thinking that's probably what we should do, right? Then instead of cloning and do it, it'd be like, hey, I'm going to install from bin tray, I'm going to install version blah of changelog tool. Yeah?
Okay.
I think that makes sense. I don't know. I guess I'm probably the only one at this point who knows how to set up all the release stuff. Yeah?
I think so.
Okay. Fuck me. Oops. Apologies for the language. But also exactly what I said. That's not true. Gordon knows the Windows stuff.
I was just going to say, I think Gordon knows at least half of it.
So, Gordon, you can I commiserate with you, but this is purely that related. Okay, Theo, could you drop a note on there that I'll do that to get the changelog stuff unblocked this weekend, and then we can move forward with that that PR.
Yeah, sure.
And that at that point they'll need to rebase, but I'll drop a note when they can.
Okay.
Okay. OpenSSL 1.1, that's 2415. Yeah.
That's the one I'm working on, Wink here.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, Wink, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
So it seems like I saw a Wink in IRC that you were working with. I don't know how to pronounce the IRC name.
Schwarzmeier.
Yeah. However you say that. But it seemed like that seemed more like it was probably user error than anything else. Yeah.
Yes.
So
and there was really no documentation. So I added a little bit of documentation to the README. I added a problem section. Not sure that's the best way to handle it, but that's what people will do, is they won't know what they're running, or likely won't know what they're running, and then there'll be a failure.
Yeah. For build problem stuff, I've been putting those right now in the FAQ section on the website. I think it would be better to go there right now, so at least they're all in the same place and we can direct folks to the same place. So that would be a small change.
At the same time, having it right on the README for, well, I don't know. No, I think Sean's right. Never mind.
I think
is there a pointer in the README to the FAQ when there's a problem?
I believe there is, but nobody should trust my memory.
What about if I keep the memory, the problem section link, and then just have one item in there for the moment, which points to the FAQ?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that.
So that people know that there are some well-known problems, and at least they'll see something to click on.
Yep. And
right.
The only other thing I think is missing is pretty much, I think all of the documentation, I don't see changes, but all of the documentation in README basically says that you need to have OpenSSL 0.9, whatever, and having something in the README that says, hey, we also support OpenSSL 1.1. This is what you need to do in order to build with it, and then this is what you need to add in each time you use PonyC. I think it makes sense to have that in the README for right now. There could be potentially a better place for it for the PonyC part, but I don't know what it would be right now. So I think all of that in the README would be good.
Yeah. Nice.
Go ahead, Mike.
So somewhere in the README, it now says 0.9.
It doesn't mention anywhere that OpenSSL 1.1 is supported, nor is there anything there for how you would use OpenSSL OpenSSL 1.1. And I didn't see, I might have missed it in your PR, but I didn't see anything that added that information.
No, I'm just looking for SSL right now. There's a few mentions about just you need SSL, but it doesn't really say anything about versions.
Okay.
So do you want me to add an OpenSSL section?
Yeah,
I would. That?
Yes, I think that would be perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
And then I don't know if you saw how this works, Sylvan. I think that this is it. I think this is good for right now, but I don't. It's we need to have longer term conversations about how do we support multiple different versions of library, things like that, because doing this for every possible library that might end up in there would probably become nasty.
Hurtful.
Yes. Yeah. Hurtful. That's better than nasty. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think this is good for right now to get people using.
Yeah, I agree. That one's really nice. For a right now solution, I think it's actually excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me just reiterate that, for instance, I'm using Arch Linux. And without 1.1 support, you can't use Pony.
Right, at all.
You can't build it yourself.
Yeah.
Now, I did come up with a technique where you can load Pony through the bin tray RPMs because OpenSSL is statically linked to those.
Okay.
So I added that. There's a section for that in the README when I did that. And when we get this in, what my hope is I'll get Arch Linux changed so that OpenSSL 1.1 will work and it'll be a regular. So at the moment, you can download Pony from Arch Linux repositories, but it's broken. It doesn't
right.
work.
Yeah.
And so I did an AUR and a Arch Linux user repository that is a workaround, but we'll be able to go back to a true distribution, I hope.
Okay.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. All right. Let me go back to the issue we can needs discussion during. Theo, did you take the needs discussion during sync off of the PR when you drop the note? Cool. All right. So let's talk about 2444.
All right.
So what inspired me to do this? All right. To start working on this. And we should talk about how I need to be inspired because I hate working with CI stuff. Yeah, I keep doing it. because somebody has to. But anyway, so around the same time, but not at the same time, that Travis updated their trustee images, which are what we use running on a virtual machine in Google Cloud. That's where our stuff runs. Around the time that they made the change, we started to get a ton of errors. One of them was problems with untarring LLVM that we were downloading, which oddly went away when I stopped having it output verbose output. Do not ask me why that worked. But when somebody suggests, when I found a suggestion for that, I thought it was magical thinking, and it didn't make any sense, because why before the change would that be an issue? But why would before the change would it work, and that we never had that problem, but afterwards we had it constantly? I don't know, but it worked. But we still have other issues where it randomly can't find packages that we need to install, usually G++ -6. This looks to me like we're running into some kind of infrastructure problem with like upstream cache things or whatnot, right?
Yeah.
So it got me thinking, there's no reason why for our test environments, we don't actually need to download this stuff all the time. We could have Docker images where everything is set up inside of there. So this is what I started doing, and I'm still with the Travis CI folks take 2 weeks off basically around the holidays and don't answer any emails.
Good for them. That's great.
So they haven't gotten back to me yet. I don't know if you can actually use custom Docker images with them. Okay. I don't believe that you actually can. There's nothing in their documentation that says that it's supported, right, for using a custom Docker image. Circle CI does allow you to do that. So this was my first attempt to try and get some stuff working in Circle CI. I did. There's some stuff where this definitely shouldn't be merged, where like I wanted to leave all of the release stuff that we have working on Travis. The OS X stuff would stay there on Travis because they have unlimited number of minutes, etc. But I ran into some interesting problems. So I went to go and with these, I tried to have these images be based off of, let me look in here to remember, Ubuntu 16.04. That's a Xenial long-term.
Yeah.
But there are not Ubuntu Xenial LLVM packages available for everything. That's an issue. you can't just download pre-built ones. So in particular, there's a 4.0.0, but not a 4.0.1, right?
Okay.
For unknown reasons. And there are no 3.7 images, 3.7 ones at all for that. There's no pre-built ones. So
okay. At this point, we could probably safely deprecate 3.7.1. That's not...
Right. So there,
how about 3.8? Can we deprecate 3.8?
I think we probably could.
I asked because I added a switch that supports static linking of but for LLVM, but it's only supported 3.9 and above. So it would be nice if we could drop those. There'd be less images to test, and then a feature that we have would work across all of the environments we support.
I think given that...
That's my G10.
Yeah, I think given that 5.0.1 is out, I would actually be comfortable deprecating 3.7, 3.8, and even 3.9 if we wanted to. That would leave us with two...
No, we can't. We can't not want to deprecate. We can't...
We still haven't solved the bug in 4 and 5.
Yeah. We need 3.9.
Okay.
And I have sporadic crashes on some of my stuff on LLVM 4 and 5.
Okay.
It's experimental. You missed that where we put it as experimental. We're like, okay, Let's get it out there. Let's see what happens. But it's definitely experimental. And 3.9.1 is still the default.
Okay, cool. 3.9.1 is what I use. And to be honest, I've been so far very, very happy with how stable it is.
It's been very nice on that front. Yeah, we have to figure out what the hell is going on with 4 and 5.
Okay.
So here are some questions that I would have. Are we okay for short term would we be okay with doing some of our Linux tests in Docker images that are running on CircleCI and some that are running in a different environment on Travis CI? So for example, I could leave the 4.0.1 thing, which is set up on Travis, I could leave that there but we run like the 5.0.1 stuff in an environment on CircleCI, and we can have it kind of split like that, and we could go forward with slowly adding more stuff over on CircleCI for the Docker containers.
I think that sounds fine. I don't see any problem with that at all.
Okay. So then here's the other question, is just as a general thing, right? Let's say a new version of LLVM comes out, right? And there's no LLVM pre-built things or whatever for right now. We're using Ubuntu 16.04, right? Yep. These Docker images. I assume we don't really care if we have to use Ubuntu 17 or whatever it is at that point, right? Okay. If that's the case, then I can move forward with getting this set up and we can start switching some stuff over. I would start with like, I think I'd start with just like, maybe I'll do a PR that just does the LLVM like 5, right? And we can work out any kinks that are there and go from there.
Cool.
So the last question would then be is, there's going to be a Docker file for every single one of these variants that we're doing, right?
Yep.
If you take a look at the PR that I have, it's in, I did a top level directory.
Docker files and per version and then the Docker file. Yep.
Yeah. That seems good to me. I don't know if anybody has any reason that we'd want to do something else.
It sounds great. The only thing I wonder is, do we want to cheat a little bit and make it a .ci Docker file? I don't know.
We could. I have no strong preference either way.
I slightly prefer really, I'm being like, this is such bike shedding and I apologize. I slightly prefer the .ci Docker files. It goes with the way we've been doing .travis, .appvar. That's all.
That works for me.
Either way.
Okay. So I will leave notes to myself later on that. And
also remember that for Ubuntu, we'll get in a couple of months, we're going to get the 18.04 long-term support release.
Yes, we can worry about that. It's
really fine to just move to that.
But I mean, the other nice thing about this is that as we have these, when we do the Docker ones, is that folks should be able to set up Docker on the machine. And in theory, the test environment should be the same on their machine as it is, you know, as much as possible.
Yeah.
There. It was, I actually found, I was like, oh my God, I actually really like this. And hey, here's a reason to use CircleCI. Woo!
Nice.
So, okay. All righty. Fun times. Okay. Let's look at 2452. Fix some spurious process manager test failures.
Ah, cool.
I have not had a chance to look at this yet. Oh, wow. Were we not doing...
Adding a few new errors like eInval and eSearch. Changing the definition for sigkill to match sigterm. That all seems very reasonable.
This looks good to me. And then you ran this in a loop and you stopped getting the failures, right, Wink?
Well, yes, I stopped. I was getting a few failures and those have gone away, but I have another problem, which is standard lib dies after a long time.
Yeah.
And that appears to be to do with the change to the scheduler.
Yep. So that's a different one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So as far as I know, this certainly doesn't hurt anything. I won't claim it fixes everything, but there was, you know, when you look at the logic, there were errors and they were being ignored or just reported, and that, you know, okay, there was an error. Okay, there's an error, as opposed to looking at what the error was and, oh, the child's already gone away or it doesn't exist. Oh, okay, well, that's not an error.
Right.
So, yeah, that was definitely an oversight there. So let's see. I'm going to squash merge. Closes 2297. Oops, make sure it labels, change log fixed. Boom, okay. Merge, boom, yeah, awesome.
Yeah, cool, nice.
Thank you, Wink. Woo! I am so happy that one is finally closed. Yay. Happy times in fun land. Really? Did this fail again? Oh my God. Good Lord. Yeah. Okay. So, let's look at 2256. This is one of Wink's. Let's take a look at that real quick. The CI
256,
2456, adds test standard lib and test standard lib debug targets to make file.
Oh, cool.
Also all of the failures that are on here would be fixed if we were running in Circle CI. I'm restarting them all again. I restarted them earlier, before the meeting, and, apparently some of them still failed, so for invalid reasons. I already had a look at it. Sylvan, what do you think? I'm a little wary of having the second debug, the test standard lib debug. I think there'd probably be a better way to do it, but I don't think it's problematic right now, but I'd be worried in the future. I wouldn't want to keep doing that where we could have an explosion potentially of jobs, but for now it seemed fine to me.
So the reason for doing standard lib as a target is I need to be able to do an easy test of just standard lib when I'm for 2451 where standard lib hangs.
Yeah.
And it's also a it's the most strenuous test we have against the packages, obviously, and so having it as a separate test makes developing easier, you know, let alone testing. So I would like to have that. If you don't want the debug version, I can certainly delete that target.
I'm okay with it now. I just worry about like an explosion of things, and if we start to have a bunch of ones where we want to have the debug target, I would think rather than having a target like that, we'd want to look at providing, like being able to provide a flag that says like, "Hey, I want standard lib, and I want you to do debug," rather than having
separate targets. Yeah, funnily enough, that's exactly what I was just looking through, because I was looking through the existing test examples. That stuff and going, okay, well, it's passing dash D, and what we could do is set up some overarching thing to handle that for us. I think doing this one right now is fine.
Yeah, that was my comment. You know, it's like now fine. I'd be worried that, you know, I wouldn't want to continue down this path with a whole bunch of other things, but it's one, so
yeah,
seems fine.
Okay.
All right. So we're good to merge this once it passes CI. Yes.
Yep.
Oops. Okay.
I'm obligated to point out after looking at the make file, I hate make and I have no better option to suggest.
I like make because I've used alternatives.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
But it does take
a special sort of frame of mind.
This may be a bit cheeky of me, but the Windows build system could probably be adapted for Linux pretty easily.
Oh, no.
Using WAF?
Wow, yes.
I think you just broke Sean.
Just kidding.
He's not kidding. I think he's serious.
I think he's serious as well. Okay, what's up with this one? Is this looks like a bunch of fake failures. So we're close to the halfway point. Does anybody have anything they want to discuss before we continue on looking at other PRs or issues?
I wanted to talk about pull request 2457, but...
We can do that.
Okay, so... So this pull request adds the first instance of handwritten LLVM IR in the project, since it implements a function that cannot be implemented in C.
Yes.
So I wanted to make sure that it was okay with people and.
And certainly yeah, fine with me. I'm sorry, I hadn't seen this. I'm just looking at it now. Okay, this is pretty awesome.
I knew you were going to say that.
Sorry. I'm a little predictable there.
Well, I've known you since you were 16, Sylvan.
This is true. Benoit, this is pretty awesome. And of course, the most unfortunate part of the whole change is the work you had to do on the make file, for which I'm very sorry. But...
Yeah, the makefile stuff was painful.
Yeah, it looks really, 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 really painful. I know it's just a minor part of it, but I think renaming the throw stuff to error is very good and very consistent. But I think the actual implementation in accept try catch.ll is a thing of beauty, and I think this is great.
I think it's valuable functionality, and I'm okay with handwritten LLVM IR for things where it's the way that needs to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking if there was any other possible way to generate this, and I don't think there is.
What level of test do we have right now for this?
That's a good question.
There's a small accept test and accept.cc for actually testing the basics of this.
And it uses a C++ Lambda to correctly. Actually, that's great. That's a really nice test.
If you scroll all the way down to the PR, at the bottom of the PR link for the files listed, it's the last one in the listing.
I see. Yeah, I didn't go quite far enough. So we have a CC test. Are we going to, there was some discussion about potentially other languages. Are there any other variants of throwing errors in C++ that it should? I'm just thinking out loud as we're looking at this.
Do you mean catching C++ exceptions from Pony?
Yeah. But are there other languages? There was a discussion, for instance, about Rust.
So I've opened an issue about that, which is 2455, which we can discuss now if it's fine to people, or we can delay it until later in the same call. So what do you think?
I would vote for having a look at it.
Okay, so I've opened that issue when I realized that the that a try block in Pony could catch a C++ exception, and vice versa, a catch all try block in C++ can catch a Pony exception.
Yeah, so, I believe you could only catch it with a catch ... right?
Yes. So I've done some research that I explained in my second comment in that issue. And the C++ part where you can catch foreign exceptions with a catch all clause is intentional. So the question, in my opinion, is really on what we should do on the Pony side. And my opinion, which I detailed in my third comment in the issue, is that we should always read through foreign exceptions, but still execute then blocks in try else blocks.
Right. So if I think the end of your comment is the most interesting conundrum for me, which your point that this has a language impact because a then block cannot assume that either try or else ran to completion. And in fact, your then won't even necessarily run to completion, as you could have a foreign exception in your then. And we can't detect statically that a foreign exception could possibly be thrown. So any Pony call that calls FFI that threw a foreign exception may not run. And that's fine, right? There's nothing we can do about that.
One thing we could do is maybe to add some way of annotating an FFI call with a way to tell that it might through a foreign exception. And then maybe also add that to Pony function signatures. So a function could have two ways of being controlled with either a Pony exception or a foreign exception, or maybe both. I don't know if we would actually want to do that, since it would. Well, I'm not sure if it's same design.
So one of the things I've been thinking about is currently the way partiality is tracked is that it's effectively treated as an effect. If anyone's familiar with effect systems, should I run through effect systems briefly, or is everyone okay with that?
I would like information, okay. Please.
Yeah, cool. So an effect system, the idea is that you've got your type system that tells you about inputs and results. An effect system is about things that may happen that are not reflected in either the inputs nor the results, but can be statically checked. So an effect system might include annotations like this could do FFI, or this could allocate memory. Now, not all of these are effects that we would want to express in Pony. For example, like some formally verified languages have the idea that you can express the effect of this is proven to terminate or this is not proven to terminate. One of the ones that we would actually want in Pony to make the finalizer static analysis better is the effect of this could possibly send a message or this, or and then if that's not there, it's safe to call on a finalizer. And so the only effect we have
and
right
so
now.
So throwing an exception is an effect?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's effectively the only effect that we track right now is this could raise an error. And if we extended the effect system, we could add effects like this might call FFI, or this might raise a foreign error, exactly as Ben was describing. I'm not saying that's where we want to go, but it is a possibility.
One thing that, you know, I'm very new to Pony, and so mine, please ignore stupid questions, but one thing that I ran across as I was looking at error handling is the only thing that we can tell the caller is there is an error.
That's right, yeah.
And we have no idea what the error is or why it happened, or there's just no other ancillary information.
Yes, I
find that a problem.
Ah, well. There's an RFC that you should read. And if you have more that you want to add to it, that would be very welcome, but there's a lot of information on it. It's in the Pony RFCs, the PonyLang /RFCs repo. And
okay.
It's in pull requests. And let me find, there it is. It's number 76, stateful exceptions. Opened last year.
Okay.
Almost a year ago. It's worth reading about. There are all kinds of issues with attaching state to exceptions. This is not to say that this is something that we'll never do by any stretch of the imagination, but it is a quite complicated set of things. And it's worth going
What about state. Just... Yeah, I'll read that, but cool. one question is, it would seem that we could pass back static information, and at a minimum, we probably know whether this was an internal error or an external error.
Yeah, as soon as we start attaching state to exceptions, though, what we get is a non-local return system. And non-local returns have some complicated implications for interesting bits of the language, particularly soundness.
Okay. All right. I'll read the RFC. It's just, cool. Tying standard errors with foreign exceptions seems a bit of a stretch on the face of it. That's all I'm saying. Without any other extra information.
So. Yeah, I mean, yes, I see. I agree. There's all kinds of interesting stuff that comes up. You're absolutely right. But there are lots of other things that come up, like exception signatures, nested exceptions. How do you handle nested exceptions without introducing a runtime cost for non-nested exceptions? How do you handle exhaustive match over exception handlers? How do you handle raising an exception while an exception is in progress? And most existing languages are just unsound when it comes to this, and they make sort of interesting decisions.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
But I wonder if we were to bind these two together under one nomenclature of an error, and then we find that in the future we really have to handle these with some other stateful information. If that would put us in a bind, I don't know. It just feels to me that these are so very different that to put them under one bucket of error.
The issue with that is that it has to do with the way landing pads and stack unwinding works, and that there is only one mechanism for doing it. And the way that a language ties into that has to do with what's called the LSDA, the language specific data area, so that there is no alternate method for landing pads. That's it. That's the whole thing. And there's a reason that languages don't generally deal very well with exceptions, with foreign exceptions of any kind. And it has to do with this. It has to do with exactly what you're talking about, that the way that the Itanium ABI, basically what I'm doing is agreeing with you. Sorry, is to make that clear. I'm totally agreeing with you.
I'm ignorant. Ignorant on the subject.
I disagree. I think
as a long-time programmer, this is. I can see this as a problem. That's all.
Oh yeah.
So totally.
You're absolutely right.
I'm hesitant. Possibly as a quote experimental feature, this might be a good thing. We need some experiments done on it and see how it feels.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think you're right. There's several interesting things that come up with this. So just going from on 2455 rather than tying it into stateful exceptions, just sort of, if you'll pardon my pun, unwinding slightly to that. Sorry. Joe's point that we don't know that the else block ran to completion. I think, Benoit, tell me when I'm wrong, but the reason we don't know that the else block ran to completion is that the else block itself could raise a foreign exception.
My thinking on that was basically what I'm proposing is that when a pony landing pad receives a Gorin exception, it doesn't run the else block and it just read through it. So for example, if you have a C++ frame above in the call stack,
you'll get that directly.
Yes.
Without running any of the extra code.
Yes, but I think we still want to run then blocks because there could be important cleanup in them. So,
well, I think there could be important cleanup in the else block as well, in some sense.
Yeah, like one of the things that one of the things I think about when we talk about this is that, like, I don't know if you guys remember, but previously I had been suggesting that we remove the then block from the language, because I think they're kind of ancillary, because you can accomplish the same thing by having code, you know, that's either outside the block or at the end of the try block, or, you know, there's other ways to accomplish the same thing. And so I think that ignoring the fact that I tried that I was trying to remove then from the language, but taking into account the point that there are other ways to accomplish the same thing, I think that Sylvan's exactly right when he says that, like, the important cleanup code that you're worrying about may be in the else block too. So it could be anywhere. Like, I don't know that, I don't think running then but not running anything else is consistent.
Yeah, I agree with that. Speaking of which, we might want to go back to that and figure out how to actually remove then from the language, because that's, anyway, still a good idea.
Is there an RFC on them?
Jody, is there? Do you remember? Is there an RFC on
there? Is it's number
a while ago. I'll take a look.
It's pull request 13.
Ah, thank you.
What was that again? 13?
Yeah, number 13 in the RFC's repo.
Okay.
It's down at the bottom. It's a lot. It's the first one at the bottom of the list in the PRs.
Yeah. I guess my inclination would be to say, if there's a foreign exception, rethrow without running either the else or the then block. Just punt. There's nothing we can do.
So the other thing that missing from the original.
When do you catch it?
You catch it in the enclosing C++ code. And if there is no enclosing C++ code, the program has to terminate.
So that means that if I run from the main actor in create, if I call a foreign function and it throws, we're dead.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is not about creating a way to interact with C++ exceptions as an API to a library. This is about when you've got Pony code that calls FFI but is being used from C++. It's a much more
okay, the inverse situation.
Yeah.
The inverse situation where C++ is calling Pony and Pony throws an exception.
Well, actually, that we can
handle.
It's the double.
Is it C++ is calling Pony, which calls C++, which throws an exception?
That's it, yeah.
Okay.
I think the thing that is most comfortable to me is to say, don't run either the else or the then block, just immediately rethrow.
Yeah, and that would simplify the implementation too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would be fine with that.
Okay. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Or otherwise, like, the only other thing that I could imagine us doing would be to treat it as if it were a Pony error, and we just lose kind of all the information that was in it. Just treat it, like, you know, ignore the language specific data, just treat it like it was a Pony error. But then you have the question of, well, what do you do when the FFI call wasn't annotated as something that could throw. I think throwing and bailing out of everything is probably the best idea.
Yeah. And also, if you did do that, then you would leak memory if they were using allocated exceptions.
Oh, yeah.
product.
You're right.
The Itanium ABI has a function for that.
Ah.
Which is unwind delete exception. So yeah, the ABI manual actually has a section on dealing with foreign exceptions. And it says that when getting a foreign exception, a runtime should do one of two things. Either delete it with unwind delete exception or read through it.
Okay. Huh.
But yeah, I mean, the question still remains of what to do when this happens outside of a context where we're in a try block because the user made an FFI call without annotating it correctly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it would matter since if we withdraw exceptions in Pony try blocks, if we withdraw foreign exceptions in Pony try blocks, then it's as if the exception didn't encounter the try block at all. So if you don't have a C++ frame ready to catch the exception above, then it would crash anyway regardless of whether the Pony try block was there or not.
Which I think leans need more towards saying, let's go ahead and rethrow without calling else or then and just bail out and treat this as utterly separate in some sense from the Pony exception mechanism.
Well, yeah. I mean, the other thing you could do is say that it ends up getting caught by the nearest try. No, I guess that gets into unsoundness if you're in the case where you're inside a function that's not marked partial that
exactly.
makes an FFI call. You're violating our explicit partial calls that we worked so hard to set up. You'd be violating that
yeah.
if you didn't annotate your C++, you didn't annotate your FFI call as something that might raise a foreign exception.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So just bail out of all Pony.
I suppose we could do. Huh. I wonder if there's any way where. I don't know if we could do it cheaply, but if there was any way to catch such an exception that came from out that wasn't annotated and just freak out and crash the program. And refusing to let it propagate because this is an exception that comes in some unannotated form. And if we could usefully print out, hey, we can't deal with this. You've thrown an exception when you weren't supposed to. But I'm afraid that would incur a cost of setting up a landing pad every time you did a call into Pony from a foreign language.
I think we could do it directly in the personality function.
But there might not be a personality function, right? You might be calling into Pony that has no landing pads at all.
I don't remember if we assign the personality function to every code generated function or only to function with ending pads. I'll check.
Okay.
Yeah, we do it only when in functions that either contain a try block
or are partial. Actually, maybe not even if they're partial.
Doesn't look like it.
Yeah, I think it's just the try blocks.
Yes, yes it is. So yeah, it would require more stuff.
Okay. I think adding any kind of overhead for this incredibly edge case is not a good idea.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's go with you threw a foreign exception. It's your problem. You deal with it. And not run the else or the then block.
Okay, then I'll add a comment on the issue. Summing up what we discussed. And I'll probably make a pull request at some point.
Okay, cool.
If no one else has anything, I have something that I'd like to bring up that would push us over time. Sylvan, in particular, it's for you, so I don't know. Can you go over time?
Yep, planning on it today.
Okay. So I never put this in. I'm not sure before I go and do the work for it. I wanted to talk to you about it. What do you think would happen if we added runtime back pressure to the cycle detector? Currently, it does not participate.
Funnily enough, I spent literally all day at work today working on stuff related to that. I think that should be generally kind of okay. I mean, clearly, I haven't thought very clearly about it, but
the reason why I'm thinking about it, right, is that for the normal use case, it shouldn't be a problem. Like, it's set right now to the cycle detector when it gets to run, will run through all of its messages now. It doesn't have a max like it used to, right, which caused massive memory explosion. But given enough actors and a small enough number of CPUs, this could still be a problem where the cycle detector doesn't get to run all that often. Actors who are triggering cycle detector messages could cause overloads. The problem is, I don't know if we don't allow the cycle, if we say, hey, you're getting muted because you sent to the cycle detector, is that going to somehow create some kind of deadlock possible scenario?
That's a good point.
I'd like to interject an observation that may or may not be related, but I was running Examples Ring. And I was passing a million messages, and when I changed the size from 10,000 to 100,000, the time to run went from 1 second to 22 seconds, and it's like, whoa, what's happening here? So young. And I was wondering if it was somehow the cycle detector.
It is.
It actually completes passing all the messages, but then takes forever to shut down.
Yeah, yeah. It is, in fact, the cycle detector. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was just a guess.
Yeah. And in fact, you can run the same thing, but turn off the cycle detector with --pony no CD. I think that's the right argument.
Okay.
And you'll see that it runs much better.
Pony no block also works for that. It has the same effect.
Okay. And yes, this is why I've spent a lot of time recently thinking about how to eliminate the cycle detector entirely.
Yeah. Dippin had some thoughts on making it more efficient, but cool. I like the fact that you've been thinking about killing it, because the last time that you and I had a conversation about this, I don't know if you remember, you were on the I want to figure out how to make it more efficient, and I was like, I think we should find a way to kill it.
Yes.
You were like, and you were like, I don't think we can do that. No, it's like, well, I still think that we should get rid of it.
So now I would like to tell you that not only is it possible,
I just,
how we're going to do it and we're going to kill it. But we can talk about that more on another call, because I'll end up chewing up everybody's time with that.
Oh, but I'm so interested to hear it.
Funnily enough, I want to talk to Theo about it very specifically once the call is done, and you're all welcome to stick around and listen in.
Wink, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I just ran no block on that test, and it took 378 milliseconds instead of 22 seconds.
Yeah.
there's a recommendation in the Pony performance doc, Wink, that one of the recommendations is if you don't need it, run. If you don't need the cycle detector, always run with Pony no block. And then there's a issue that I opened to make it so that you can set you can basically compile a Pony program with Pony no block set so that you don't have to pass it as a runtime flag, where you can get the much better performance that you would get in many applications that the cycle detector doesn't actually make any sense to run anyway.
So that would be like default_pick. It would be default_noblock.
Something like that. Yeah. There's some discussion on the issue. I don't know what the issue number is off the top of my head. It's on the Pony C repo. We had a bit of discussion about it. Well, how long do you need to talk people's heads off about getting rid of the cycle detector, Sylvan? How long does that take?
We should do it next week. Sorry.
Okay.
It just takes too long.
That's good. That's fine. We can do that. We can do that next week. Dun, 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 dun. Sylvan, did you see the other scheduler change that came from Dippin that went in?
I did.
Which apparently causes at least every now and then for programs not to shut down correctly. But Dippin's still looking at that. It happens. It happens. As far as I know, Dippin has not been able to reproduce it, but Wink can. With his setup, so there's something going on.
Yeah, it happens to me quite easily now. I was dipping into the ring to see if I could find a simpler program other than standard lib to cause the problem, but I'm unsuccessful at the moment. And but maybe if I stress ring with no block. Because right now, there's this other problem and I can't make it run fast enough. So anyway,
no problem with that. Yeah.
The other possibility that could always be there is that it might have exposed the problem in the runtime back pressure stuff. I mean, I don't want to put it just on what Dippin did, right? He made a scheduler change. The runtime, it could have potentially exposed some edge case in the runtime back pressure stuff as well, which is, when we merged that, we knew that, it was possible. It had been tested a lot, but you never know. Anytime the scheduler says, I'm not going to run an actor.
I determined a couple things with my test, and that was if you go back to 0.10 before Dippin's changes, it doesn't fail for the standard lib running in a forever loop.
Yeah.
But if you have him, then it does. That doesn't, again, your point is still taken. It's just, it may be exposing a problem elsewhere. The other thing, I was able to simplify standard lib down to less than half the number of tests and still cause it to fail, but it takes longer. So anyway, I was trying to come up with a test scenario where it fails without having to run, 20 different tests in standard lib. But I'm unsuccessful so far to come up with a singular simple test.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't think you're going to come up with a singular test, because it's some scheduler interaction that happens every now and then with potentially something with muting, but then also it putting, stuff to sleep. Oh, Sylvan, we are over, but do you have a couple more minutes?
Yep.
Okay, so there's the one other thing. So Dippin's change, which triggered something, that did take care of an awful lot of issues related to scheduler block and unblock messages, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Because you don't have schedulers that are constantly trying to send block messages when there's not enough work, right? That was causing the big reason why that caused the memory explosion. I don't know if you saw this from stuff, but the block and unblock messages are different sizes, and that interacts with the allocator in a interesting and nasty way.
Yep.
If you make the block and unblock messages the same size, you don't have the memory explosion. Because they can keep reusing the space that was there, but otherwise you end up with this weird fragmentation type stuff where it keeps growing.
Yep. Very good find.
Now, I didn't do any change related to that at this point, because with Dippin's, it doesn't really happen, right? But you can see occasional tick, tick, tick in memory with stuff where it happens. So I don't know. Do we want to make that change? It makes the unblock messages slightly more expensive, because they're like a little bit bigger, so that they would be the same size as the block ones, which actually carry some information, some additional information. But it's a change we could do. But I don't know. I know you've been working on a new allocator. So is it, given that it's not a problem right now, I don't want to. It's more of a theoretical problem right now than anything else, right?
Right.
I don't want to put the work into it if, you know, there's going to be a new allocator that comes along anyway and maybe makes that pointless, and now we're using extra memory anyway that we might not care about going forward. Yeah.
So I'm just looking through it, send message. And it's allocating the same size thing.
There's some pairing of them that's not the same size. I could be wrong about it being block and unblock, but of the scheduler messages, not all of them are the same size. And when I made them all the same size, the problem went away.
Okay. Okay.
When I looked at this, there was another set of messages called block and unblock that I looked at, and I was confused at first because they were the same size, but scheduler block and unblock are different sizes.
Yes. Scheduler block and unblock. Is that what you looked at, Sylvan? Not the block and unblock message, the scheduler block and unblock
one. Yeah, shed block.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that are that
block
different.
Scheduler.c.
That sounds right. It's been a while since I looked at this.
You know what? Don't let me waste time. I completely believe you.
Yeah. it might not be those two. Right, but there is one that gets sent often that's paired with another, and it's a different size. And when you make them the same size, problem went away.
All right,
which we can thank Scott Fritchie for pointing me in the general direction of that.
Nice,
you know, him being my bug muse. Okay, so does it make sense to do work to fix that, or do you think with potential new allocator coming that it's like, let's just leave it for now?
If it's easy to do, I would say do it now. Why not just do it now? And then we don't have to be blocking on something showing up to fix it. If it's hard to do, that's a different issue. But if it's relatively easy to do, it seems like...
It's easy to do. We change the size of the messages to all be the same, right? And then they'll use, and programs will use a little bit more memory potentially.
I think that sounds like a win.
Okay.
Yeah. I just think that we should track this maybe so that we can, if we come up with another solution to the issue, we should track this, reverting this, so that we don't use the extra memory later when we have a different solution.
Good point.
That sounds reasonable.
That could be as simple as a nice fat comment in the code of blah, 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 where the thing is allocated of a different size than it needs to be.
Okay. That's it. Sorry for dragging it out, folks. I'm normally the one who's like, keep it on schedule. End. All right. 10 minutes over. Thanks, everyone, for coming. I'm going to hit stop now. Good day.
Thanks, everybody.